The Queen's Head, Part 4. Thistlethwaite's Planetary Baedeker, 134th edition, page 344. Entry, Shalafu. As we have said, Shalafu is a planet inhabited by a weasel-like race, large by terrestrial standards. The Shalafu variety approaches 2 meters in height. Except for the weasels and its 2 moons with their shallow swirling marsh tides, the planet is unremarkable. Over time, the weasels hammered out a modest feudal civilization, the taller subjugating the smaller. Inspector Pingold straddled a piece of furniture that allowed an occupant to rest comfortably on his haunches in a supported crouch as if he were deep in meditation. A word processor beeped impatiently. He had not struck a key for 10 minutes. "Pathetic, what we've come to." He stood, struggling free. "We were Highlanders, squatting by the fire and honing our blades by its light." His eyes were dark-rimmed from lack of sleep. "It is the right, is it not, of each and every honest fool who toils under the sun to expect no less than a good night's sleep?" "Correct as always, Inspector," Lapwood Spurdick, Sergeant, slammed home a file drawer, "and perhaps a little something in his stomach to tide him over, and a mite to put away against clearing his marker from the tax rolls." Pingold climbed back into the chair's flowing, coiling design. These chairs were new, and the inspector didn't like new things. "Damn!" His foot had become stuck in a rear aperture. "Tail haul, latest thing," said his sergeant. The word processor beeped again. "Look at you, you never turn it off. You're scrolling and spinning inside your head, positively spattered, rather than an alert proper copper. Frankly, Vass, you are a nervous wreck. Calm down. You're working yourself into behavioral modification therapy. Get a life." Spurdick enjoyed the familiarity they allowed themselves in the confines of their office. He had been waiting, with a consoling cup of tea and mountains of paperwork to be read and initialed.
"I knew her, Lap. No, I mean, I recognized her. The head?" Pingold scrubbed at his long curved incisors with his tail tip.
"This is ground we've already covered. You don't appear lost in immediate grief. Not a sweetheart, wife or mother. What then? Someone you ran in, shaking down prostitutes in Old Town?"
"I saw her in a museum."
"She was a scholar, a guide."
"She was, is.
An exhibit, a queen of the hill people."
"We've been friends for, how long, Vashon? 20 years or more. And the woman troubling your sensibilities has been stiff as salt fish for thousands of years. I've never seen you like this. 20 years mopping up after the death stats and enforcing the queen's justice. Take a rest, Pingold." The sergeant paused, eyeing the tail in his superior's hand. For much use, its sable inflorescence resembled a brush left to harden in a pail of turps.
"Damn! Damn! Damn!" Pingold stuffed the tip in a rear pocket of his uniform fatigues. "An uncle from your mother's sept willed you a hideaway. Let's take a break. You must have 2 years accumulated leave. What say you, old friend?"
The appeal of time off was undeniable.
"Yes," said Spurdick. "We'll do it. But suppose you first tell me more about your mystery lady. I wouldn't want to think I'm going camping with a maniac."
Pingold told about the dream, while Spurdick shuffled a stream of papers under his hand for initialing. The story of the queen ended concurrently with the signing of the final memorandum. The sergeant was enthusiastic.
"Then we shall go back to nature and loosen the bonds of care, for a few days at least. There are those among us who favor the opinion, held in high places, though not approved, that we are evolved from the primitives, the indigenes, the small rulers of the high heath who now mop our latrines."
"Indigenes now mop latrines. A not inept turn of phrase, Sergeant. Infelicitous, but accurate. Your snappy jingle is a paradigm of evolutionary theory, although a regrettable delusion. Seven-handed Bellefaw, through his archiepiscopate, argues differently." Pingold had no problems with public espousal of a doctrine which privately all reasonable people found foolish. The transport left them off where the road ended, abruptly, as though the construction crews had broken off for lunch, wandered away, and lost their maps. As the borrowed constable sped the commandeered flitter back to the motor pool, Pingolden Spurtick watched its dot shrink and disappear on the horizon, feeling the thrill of aloneness. Hitching their packs, the two detoured a quarter mile around a vast thicket of wild roses in Barry and headed to the hills. The two were officially out of touch. The constable would return in a month. The day's hike up country to Spurtick's camp wore them out, their city muscles weary from the unused toil. They undogged the simple latch of the door and, flushed with accomplishment, stumbled into the welcoming dark. The inspector fell into one of a pair of rickety chairs that had been reinforced with twisted wires at the joins. As their ragged breathing subsided, the wilderness quiet welled up to envelop them. Lapworth Spurtick, sergeant to Her Majesty's Ministry of Public Safety, Queen's Own Civil Militia, flung his pack across the room into a hammock, and, careless of his tail, slid gently to the floor as he undid the stopper of a water flask. "Every year it's the same. I find this shack a getaway that fills a soul emptied in the service of the Queen's archive. Filing is hardly proper work for the descendant of fierce warrior chieftains." The single room was sparsely furnished, with a plank table covered with wind-blown litter that had entered through the leeward window where a broken shutter banged listlessly. An insect voice, a big bug, either hungry or passionate from the loudness of its call, rang in the bush. Pingold rose and checked the fastening of the door. It was synthetic material, bolted to a modular frame. Spurtick noticed his interest. "My mother's uncle had it airlifted in by Flitter. He was a duff old coot, a loner, and versed in the lore of the primitive life. But he liked the weather kept outside. He glorified the savage Highlanders, ate roots, and roamed the woods when he tired of his stock brokerage, which was only so often as his growing families allowed," Lap Spurtick wryly added. Pulling on a ring set into the floor, the sergeant upended a trapdoor. "I'll show you a trick." A blast of cool air burst into the cabin, with a sound of running water down, distant, far below. "Hold the door." Spurtick lay prone and fished about, retrieving a braided handle of rope. Standing back, wary of the drop, Spurtick drew in the rope hand over hand, neatly coiling it at his feet. This was heavy work, and shortly he belayed the line to a cleat in the floor. "A parable, my friend. If one works hard enough and long enough, there are rewards at the end of the rope. My sept-uncle put these by the year I was born, and I am ready to share them with a friend. My muscles are flabby from a year behind the desk. You give a try, but have a care. This is precious cargo." Pingold wiped his hands on the front of his jumper and took hold of the line. A final 10 meters, and a metal cage was pulled from the hole. Glistening black bottles, icy cold and dripping, filled the cooler. "A rare treasure your uncle has left us." They ate dry rations and washed them down with a set-by cider and slung their hammocks near the stove. That night, Vashon Pingold enjoyed his first undisturbed sleep in a week. At high noon on their second day, a tiny creature, tattooed and wiry, carrying a wild pumpkin almost its size, appeared at the door.
"Selly, selly, good tasty pumpkin for big fella boss. Make nice soup."
This was the first primitive Pingold had seen in the wild. He felt positively huge. The little fellow barely came to his waist.
"But soup I'll have to make. I'm on vacation. Sorry, old chap. Send me a cook with the next pumpkin, and then we'll talk."
Seemingly undisturbed by the rejection of his wares, the primitive shrugged and departed. The inspector was dumbfounded. It looked almost normal. That indigene.
"Everything looks almost normal if you delve deep enough. Unwind enough strands of the genetic code and the whole world is related. How many tears did you shed for last night's dinner?" Lap Spurtick was irritated. "We could have used that pumpkin. I would have cooked up a fine soup, and now you've offended the source of supply for trustworthy vegetables. Pray he'll return."
The next night, the nightmare of the Queen and the House of High Dormers was back. Pingold opted to stay awake. He squatted on a lean-to veranda and studied the stars, keeping his own counsel. He was drowsy enough by false dawn to creep back to his hammock for a nap.
Spurtick was up before the dawn, rattling about with breakfast chores and unbearably cheery. "Well, to coin a phrase,
here we are."
"Lap, lap, lap. The years have neither dulled your powers of observation, nor the childlike glee with which you belabor the obvious. We were here yesterday."
"Come." Pingold walked out onto the porch. I am now to sit in the shade of that faranga tree and draw sustenance from the earth. Spurdick stretched his arms high above his head and slammed his talons into the exterior clapboarding of the cabin just under the eaves. He arched his body in the long rays of the early morning sun and lashed his tail. God, I feel good. And you have just made a joke. Feeble, but a joke. Pin, we're like two boys on a holiday. It was an irony, not a joke. And this insect-infested wilderness possesses a beauty all its own. At the office, I'd become useless, turned into a bag of synapses with a taste for raspberry tarts. When that head came bouncing out of the pathologist's surprise package, I felt emotions I've not allowed myself for decades. The luxury of animal panic, fear, terror. I'd become mentally incompetent, he allowed himself to slip into the jargon of the career civil servants, and will soon be fit for nothing but weeding the tetrarch's radishes. I shall opt for early retirement. At half pay? Don't be a fool, Inspector. Hang on for the full term and retire like a gentleman copper. Relax. Read a book. Spurdick leaned inside the door and reached down a complex-looking rod and net arrangement from the wall. And I shall pursue our dinner at a noble fishing hole known only to me and my uncle. Give us a hand with the well-hatch. There's a love. The same cooler that had given up the cider proved to be a fountain of live bait, too. There's a reason the old-timers left loose joints when they set the stones for their well-casings. These live in the crevices. Hang on to my tail, would you?
Spurdick's head went over the edge, then his shoulders. Ingold held on and dug his heels into the floorboards. Spurdick scooped out a few handfuls of wriggling slugs and popped them in his creel. Be seeing you. And he was gone.
Thistlewaite's Planetary Baedeker, 134th edition, page 336. Entry, Shalafu. Majestic panoramas are not Shalafu's strong suit. The two moons' cyclical alignment pulls 16-centimeter tsunamis over thousands of kilometers of Shalafu's surface to where, over their generations, patient waiting birds had learned to wait for shoals of fish to come cascading up an imperceptible gradient to the dusty coastal plain. Pingold started at a small sound almost below the auditory threshold. The country's stillness and the constant thrumming of mating insects only served to amplify his own pounding pulse and the rush of blood through his ears. A city copper gone winko in the bush. This is indeed bizarre. Smack, bounce, bounce. There it was again. The sound of a small, hard fruit ripened and falling from the tree. There were no nut trees near Spurdick's hunting cabin. Smack, bounce, bounce. He walked to the door, and opening it a crack, peered out. An indigene, generally of his proportions but half his height, was outside. The Highlander squatted in the clearing in the center of a circle of nuts evenly placed. A white stripe painted down the length of his muzzle marked him as a shaman of the hill tribes. He was naked, but for a belt braided of what looked like sable tail tufts. Whose? Pingold suppressed a shudder. The lone faranga tree, covered with feathery vines of strangled peas that eventually would suck its life away, gave him minimal protection from the pounding midday sun. His eyes were closed, and his head thrown back. As Pingold watched, the person dipped forward, picked up one of the nuts, and shied it at the cabin. Smack. Bounce. Bounce. Eyes still closed, he reached into a woven grass bag carried slung over one shoulder, withdrew a fresh nut, and placed it in the empty space in the circle. He bobbed forward a few times, as though at prayer, and his head lolled back as a peristaltic wave rippled up his throat. A whistling insect call exited his nostrils. Pingold opened the door fully and stepped out onto the rough-hewn planking of Spurdick's veranda. Hello? The insect call ceased, but the bobbing continued. I say, hello there. Ignoring him, the Highlander spoke to the sky. Bedifa, any bill? I beg your pardon, but I'm not Bill. I am Pingold, Inspector Vashon Pingold, and I do not have your language. Do you speak the Queen's tongue? The ritual, if a ritual it was, continued. There was no acknowledgment of Pingold's existence. The Highlander resumed his insect trills, leaned forward to pick up another nut, and shied it at the house. The nut bounced off Pingold's paunch. The inspector sighed and went back into the house.
Smack. Bounce. Bounce.
The Highlanders' target practice continued into the afternoon. Pingold managed to ignore it and dozed off over an ancient romance. When he awoke, the medicine man was standing beside him.
Bang the wee wangie. Down for the willua.
Yes, of course. Whatever you say, old chap. I don't recall inviting you in.
The diminutive Highlander smelled, not badly but pungently, as of wild grapes rotting in the sun mixed with freshly dug earth.
But you did.
What? You did invite me in? You speak my language. The inference I could not was yours, Inspector.
Pingold marked his place and set his book aside, swinging his legs over the side of the hammock.
Vashon Pingold, Inspector, and I fear you have the advantage of me.
Dermis? Dermis Cleggo Clue.
Well, Cleggo Clue, how may I help you?
The answer, Inspector, is more rightly another question. How may I help you?
Oh, since we're being terribly civilized, I should point out that you are a trance practitioner, a priest of the wild people, while I am a civil servant, a copper, the muscle of the established church. Have you a license for whatever mumbo-jumbo you were performing in the dooryard?
Cleggo Clue backed off 2 paces and produced a melon from his bag.
Knock into fiber juice. Very nice, gumba gumba.
He handed the melon to Pingold and walked out the door. We appear to have lost the gift of tongues. Toting the large and very ripe fruit, Pingold followed. He noted the melon was the source of the aborigine's musty odor. Cleggo Clue was again seated under the faranga tree, his eyes rolled back, his throat rippling with the beginning of another insect trill.
I say, old chap, must you do that in the yard? I mean, I suppose these displays are to help you cope with the incessant boredom of survival and have any number of therapeutic advantages, but shouldn't you be in the hills adoring a petroglyph or something? I'm trying to read and relax.
The shaman's eyes rolled down and focused on the inspector. The insect trill likewise descended, sliding down the octaves to become speech.
We have been told you would be intransigent but trustworthy.
You have been lying with women, with pale salty water for blood. This rots the mind. I will give you blood and answers.
Upending his bag, he dumped his collection of nuts on the ground.
Come, sit inside my circle and bring the melon. We shall refresh your recollections. You, Inspector, are reaching for a rung on a letter of the law you can't quite reach.
You have dreamed of the Ishaxi, not the Tetrarch's puppet.
But the queen of your dreams.
Then you are not the dream sender.
An apparition of the queen is essentially an appeal to knowledge. Your abilities to see have atrophied.
They are not non-existent. You cannot see what is making this happen. Only that it has happened. You can feel and breathe in a blossoming of reality, and reality is an appearance.
So let us say that you appear to me to be sincerely here, Inspector Vashon Pingold. The dream sender is merely trying to get your attention.
Therefore you and I are a purely natural occurrence.
Let us therefore just enjoy one another's company. I am the Ishaxi singer. No more,
no less.
The queen of my dreams is a face, a portrait statue, or a childish obsession. From the museum.
A foolish love for an ancient queen.
She, that one of carved stone, is dead.
Her face? I saw it alive, or recently dead. She lived.
Perhaps she lived imperfectly. And with your help, Inspector Pingold, an imperfect justice will be done.
This is no blood feud. I'm not called vendetta. These are the old ways. She was not your stepcousin, stepsister, but ours.
There will be a blood price. You shall exact it. We will be satisfied.
She will come again.
We? Everyone I speak to is a we these days, except me. I am alone. I am alone.
Aye, truly, Inspector. Go about your business. Enjoy your vacation. We will be in touch.
We owe you a favor.
Oh, and Inspector.
The Ashoxi singer rose to leave.
Yes? Take off some weight.
This is the end of part 4. The Queen's Head continues with part 5.